G'day and welcome to the Head Shepherd Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Ferguson, CEO here at NextGen Agri. I've worked in livestock farming and breeding for over 25 years, and through this journey, I've met some truly wonderful people. It's fantastic to have the opportunity to share their stories and their wisdom with you through this Head Shepherd Podcast. It's also fantastic to meet new people through the podcast, and I'm always humbled by the generosity of people that take the time to have a chat and share their stories. I also very much appreciate you, our loyal listeners, who continue to listen in and provide your feedback each week. It's very much appreciated. This podcast is supported by our good friends at Allflex and MSD Animal Health, who are guided by the one mission of the science of healthier animals. Now combined, these companies have one of the widest livestock product portfolios in Australasia, with a comprehensive suite of animal health products through things like the Cooper's range and the ID and monitoring solutions that Allflex are famous for. Their products are all backed up by their exceptional service, and we are really proud to continue to have their support in bringing this podcast to you each week. Okay, let's get this show on the road. Welcome back to Head Shepherd. Thanks again to all those listeners out there. Great to have you listening along. Great to see those social media posts where we've been sharing long drives across Australia and all over the place. It's always awesome to see and hear where people are listening to Head Shepherd. As always, yeah, if you get the opportunity to share what we do, we'd really appreciate that. And rating us on wherever you're listening to us would be awesome as well. We are back across the oceans this week. We get around a bit, and this week we're back over in Scotland, actually, and we've got Ryan McLean on board. Welcome, Ryan.
Hi, Mark.
Whereabouts are you before we get underway? Where are you coming to us from? You did mention you got an inch and a half snow outside, which, so I've stopped whinging about the cold Kiwi summer.
But. Yeah, no, at the moment I'm sort of northwest Scotland. I'm sort of central at the moment, actually, staying at my girlfriend's place, a place called Garve. So we're about an hour north of Inverness.
Cool. I guess I came across you through Dan Wheeler, who is over there preg scanning at the moment, and obviously we'll get on to how you get to know Dan in a minute, but obviously you've had a long association with him, and we'll cover that off in a minute. But just wanted to start off with, I guess, your background, how you, what you've done to get to where you are today and what you do today.
Yeah, so was brought up on a beef and sheep farm. So my father manages a place out on the coast. And then we've got our own place, sort of neighbours it. So there's running about between our own and the farm. There'll be about 1,000 ewes and about 100 to 120 breeding cattle. And there's a small herd of pedigree limousines. We've just started up a herd of pedigree galloways. All the sheep are Cheviots. There's a few kind of crossbred Cheviot Texels, but yeah, that's about the gist of it.
Cool. And then you're obviously you spend a bit of time on the farm, but you spend a lot of time off farm. And what's your contracting business do?
Yeah, so I've been shearing for the last 10 years ago. First picked up the handpiece when I was about 15. Started off with shearing, just kind of took over the old man's run. He was doing about 2,000 sheep, or less even, just for neighbours and smallholders and whatnot. And then kind of built that up over a few years, and then teamed up with another contractor and took over from him when he was giving up. And yeah, we're shearing about between 50,000 and 60,000 now, so covering the whole of the northwest Highlands, we get around a bit, get to see some characters and some good yards around the road. So yeah, it's good. And then also kind of picked up scanning there. It'll be three or four years ago now. So I'd run out of visas for New Zealand and done my 2 years out in Oz. So yeah, it was time to stay home. And I think if I'd gone away again, I'd have probably ended up single. So. It was a good idea to stay home for the winter, and I took over my girlfriend's father's scanning business. So yeah,
cool. Well, you might have met a nice Kiwi last month, but yeah. 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 So you have travelled through Australia and New Zealand a bit.
Yeah. So I actually put that down to a lot of sort of what I've achieved over the last couple of years is had phenomenal experiences over there, shepherding and shearing. But yeah, sort of a shepherd at heart, but just kind of got the shearing bug too. So yeah, and shearing is a great way to get around the country and meet a lot of different people, see different systems. You get to see the good, the bad, and the indifferent. So it's New Zealand was an awesome place. I was shepherding on a place up in just north of Havelock for Dirk Walden, Awapapa Farm. He's all Kelso ewes, and he's fattening bulls when I was there. So I couldn't have asked for a better fellow to have landed in with. Really nice family, and kind of taught me all the good stuff about what there is to do in the North Island. So that was a lot of Heineken, a lot of sore heads, and some good sheep. So.
Oh, you're lucky to be getting fed Heineken in the north. You should have been on Steining Classics up there.
Seemed to be a bit of a green bottle gang that I fell into. So.
Yeah, a lot of green bottles up there, that's for sure. Yeah. I see that you're wearing a Kelso t-shirt proudly there today.
Yeah. So, the Dirk was running all Kelso ewes. I think he'd kind of transitioned from Romney's over to the Kelso Composites about maybe 7 or 8 years before I was there. So the ewes were pretty well full Kelso, and got in tow with Matt Holden. And yeah, between both those fellows and their neighbours and whatnot, got to meet some really good people and guys that were really willing to kind of teach you a lot about farming. And I found that farmers in New Zealand in general were much more open to talking about business and the good and the bad sides of it. I think a big difference is over there is that unless it makes sense on a spreadsheet and you know, once you balance the numbers, there's no subsidy to fall back on. So it's that was a big part of it. I went out there wanting to learn about how to grow grass, make money, and shear sheep, and I came back with a pretty good idea of how to do at least two of them.
Excellent. I haven't been all around the world, but Kiwi farmers are pretty handy grass farmers, and certainly lots to learn, and lots to admire about how they go about utilising every square inch of the place over here and having the ewes in good order, and for sure. We should talk about the bearded wonder, Dan Wheeler. He's over there at the moment scanning, which is, he'll be very excited to be over there drinking whiskey straight from the source.
Exactly.
How did you come across that bloke?
Oh, well, it was, it must have been probably 6 or 7, I think, and Dan came out to scan the old man's ewes. He kind of worked alongside my now girlfriend's father. Met Dan and thought he was a bit of a bastard the first time because he was telling me that all the empty ewes had to get culled, that, you know, no second chances. I adopted that as soon as I got my own flock, and started to notice the difference, getting rid of the slack. Dan now is sort of a bit of a mentor for me. He's a good hand, and he's always willing to talk. So you give Dan a question about sheep, and he'll answer them.
Yeah, you're always going to get some words. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, exactly. So
I'm sure he's taught you a thing or two about the bottom of a whiskey bottle as well, maybe. But.
There's been a bit of that too. It's funny actually, because it was because of Dan that I ended up with Rachel. I was visiting Dan one day when I was shearing down in Waimate, so I thought I'd take a run up to see Dan one day, and we were talking about dogs, working dogs, and he said two of the best working dogs I think I've seen actually is yours and Rachel Urquhart's, and I'm sure they're litter mates. So I'd always kind of seen Rachel around the market, you know, sheep sales and whatnot, and I always kind of had an eye for her, but never had the you know, they get up to go and speak to her. So straight home, straight on Facebook Messenger, you know, you got any pups on the go just now? You know, couldn't get any out of my own. And yeah, that was the start of it. So
excellent.
Dan teed that one up.
Excellent. I'm sure he claims that. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So how long have you and Rachel been together now?
That'd be coming on 5 years. So yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The long suffering Rachel.
Yeah, awesome. You're we've all got one of them at home, I think. Very long suffering wife at this end, but anyway. your contracting business, is does that keep you full time, or you get a bit of time at home on the farm?
Yeah, so basically my year's split up into four quarters. I spend from January through to March I'm scanning sheep. Then I go home, I'm lambing and calving, and trying to get any spring work done, get grass seed in the ground, lime spread, fertilizer on, and then the start of kind of my early shearing, my ram shearing, that kind of kicks off in May. That'll take me through to August, and then from August I'm scanning cows, so that takes me up to Christmas, and then all of a sudden we're back at sheep. So yeah, it's a busy year. So long as the seasons kind of behave themselves, we can get through everything fine. But it's when you start getting funny seasons, weather changing and whatnot, the shearing can kind of clash with the cat skin, but we make it work. So I'm lucky, got a really good shearing team. Boys and girls are really good. So quite a young team, but yeah, they can knock out a few sheep. So
yeah, right. What's the, I guess for us, well, you know what Australia and New Zealand shearing sheds look like. What's the setups that you get to work with in Scotland? Are they all the same, or you got fairly varied?
I wish we did, yeah. No, unfortunately, we've not got the luxury of shearing sheds. So basically, the way most contractors in Scotland run is with a shearing trailer. The same way as you guys have crutching trailers, we'll go around, like I've got 2 3-stand trailers and sort of building a 2-stand trailer at the moment. So yeah, it's they're pretty good. You know, we can roll into a farmer's field wherever he is. There's a lot of people over here, they'll have summer grazings away from home and whatnot. So we'll just go out and we'll shear the sheep wherever they are. It takes, you know, 10 minutes to set up, but once we're going, it's almost like being in a shearing shed, except from we don't have to drag the sheep. The sheep are in a raised race, so they drop down, so that you save a lot of energy that way.
And that's conventional shearing, like you shear them on the board, pull them out of the race and shear them on the board. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the chances you get dry sheep under that setup? Seems like remote.
That's the biggest stress of being a shearing contractor in Scotland is that you know, especially in the north of Scotland, you're probably in the wettest region you could be in. But we're fortunate, like I've got some really, really good farmers who pull out all the stops to make sure they have sheep dry for us. So there's guys who will have good sheds, big sheds, that they'll winter the cattle in, and they'll run sheep inside for us. If the weather is broken, you have to kind of stay on the ball with the forecast, and people kind of need to realize that, you know, you're doing the best you can with the weather. So, you know, sometimes you have to change plans at 4 a.m. when you get up in pouring rain at where you're supposed to be going. So phone all your farmers in the other side of the country and see what's happening there. It's the beauty of shearing in the north of Scotland, apart from the bad weather, is that we cover coast to coast. So generally, if it's wet in the east coast, you can go to the west coast and vice versa. So yeah, we're never stuck. Like this season, I think we had 2 days where there was no sheep showing. But yeah, most of the time we'll get something somewhere.
Yeah, okay. I guess that's the beauty of being mobile. You can just go wherever it's dry.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Are you shearing off wool of any value, or is it all sort of?
No, unfortunately not. It's it's a common complaint with farmers over here. The value of the wool. So there's farmers who I'll go out to and shear, say 500 sheep for, and they're actually having to pay to get rid of the wool by the time they pay the haulage. So yeah, it varies from your coarse wools being your Hardwicks, your Blackies, and your Swinerdales, you'll maybe be getting 40 pence a kilo, up to your kind of finer wools, your Cheviots, your Blue-Faced Leicesters, your mules. You'll be maybe lucky if you're hitting £1, £1.20 a kilo for that.
Yeah, what a interesting use of fine. Different to what we might think of as fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very, very different to what I was hearing in Australia. It's kind of hard to explain to farmers over here. Like, farmers get really frustrated with the price of wool, and they see the price of wool in Australia, and they try and compare it. But the lad who I took over from, we had a farmer complaining one day about the price of wool over here and how his cousins in Australia were getting so much more money for the wool. And Alistair, the fellow I took over the shearing from, he didn't really mince his words, and he just turns to the farmer and he goes, "Are you fucking stupid? That's like comparing oak to plywood." You know, they're two totally different products. It's both have their jobs, and it's a shame that our wool doesn't get used more often, you know, for your carpet wool and whatnot. But you know, when it's so cheap to produce these plastic fibers and everything, people on a budget building houses, you can't afford to pay 4 or 5 times the amount to get woolen carpets. So
yeah, no, it's definitely something the world has to get sorted, and I think the trends are all the right way, and yeah, it'll be interesting how the next 10 years pans out. But
yeah,
what's the typical flock size that you're sort of shearing?
To be honest, that's actually a figure I don't have off the top of my head, but the average kind of flock will be going out to, will probably be in the region of about 400.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's the other thing. We'll be going out to maybe, you know, 3 to 4 farms a day for shearing. A lot of it, you know, a lot of the farms will maybe have more sheep than 400, but that's all they have on each specific holding, or they can handle that day, et cetera, et cetera. So sort of our biggest customer will probably be running in the region of about 4,000, 4,500. And our smallest customer has 2. So
you got the full range covered.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
So your own farm and your own, I guess, from our previous chats, you're quite interested in genetics and what sort of things you got going on back at home?
Yeah, so like I said earlier, the beef side's kind of mixed. There's a few pedigree limousines kicking about the place and just getting the ball rolling with the Galloways. And then the kind of, we've been AIing them for about 10 years. And in fact, it's even longer than that. We nearly 20 years Dad's been AIing the pedigree limousines. So been kind of a bit of genetic work done there. A lot of what we need is a sort of smaller frame beast or carry condition where we have really high rainfall. We'll be up around the 2,800 mils of rain. And so you need an animal that can handle those kind of conditions. So looking for high fat, kind of lower mature weight. And it's the same with the sheep. And the sheep are probably more my kind of thing. I like both, but I've got more sheep than I do cows. So yeah, just when I was in New Zealand, I really saw the benefits of performance recording. Kind of crunched a few numbers with a couple of farmers when I did my study tour out there and compared their kind of transition from being your traditional Romney bought the market to, well, a lot of the guys who I was kind of talking to were on the Kelso composites. And when you see the numbers of, you know, the zeros in the bank account changing over to the composite sheet, it's unbelievable. You know, and it was a no-brainer. It's like one farmer said to me, you know, what's the point of working hard when you can go to the beach? You know, that was the attitude that I loved over there. I remember speaking to another farmer and just having a yarn and asking him. I was trying to arrange a visit for when I was doing the study tour, and I kind of said to him, I said, you know, when are you available? And he says, oh, well, I'm away just now. I'm away skiing, but, you know, I should be back in a couple of weeks, and, you know, we can meet up then. I said, all right, the sheep not lambing just now. Yeah, they're lambing away. Yeah, they should, they'll be fine, you know. Like over here, you know, we're going around the sheep like 4 or 5 times a day at lambing. You know? Yeah, different worlds.
Yeah, much better skiing than lambing bait.
Yeah, so that kind of kicked off the passion. And then 2 years ago, I started performance recording my own flock at home. So my own flock, there's I think there was 130 ewes to the ram this year in the recorded flock. Just doing the basics at the moment, ewe weight, lamb weight, body condition scoring at every handling. Also quite interested in not necessarily going down the wool shedding route, but just interested in recording it because there's a lot of chivy that seem to shed the wool. Daniel found it quite ironic that a shearing contractor was interested in shedding sheep. Something that I think could be a possibility and make a lot of sense for a lot of farmers over here. And like I say, there's approximately 10% of my flock this year shed their fleece. So,
hey, right on.
It's something that I'd like to kind of start tracking, but and still just kind of transitioning over to getting fully recorded rams. That's kind of my biggest issue at the moment. There's not a lot of other people doing performance recording cheviots. I've got a one really good sire. He's got the exact figures that I'm after: low birth weight, low mature weight, and high fat. And then I've got just a stock sire that I've been using over my dad's flock for the last 3 or 4 years, and the only reason I've not used him myself is because he's got black spots on his head, but his lambs are that good that I don't care about the black spots anymore. Sick of dad having better lambs than mine, so took him back in. The other sire, he's just bought from a local breeder who is big into breeding sheep for good wool and no kemp and longevity is a big thing in his flock. He's got ewes running around that have never missed a beat, and they're sort of 11-12 years old. So
all right, cool. Are you, the intention is to breed and sell rams, or is that something down the track?
That's a long term kind of goal. Like, I've been breeding rams for a couple of years now, and mainly using them on dad's place. Sold a few locally, but yeah, not really wanting to just push selling them until I get a bit of figures behind them and really, you know, start to understand what I'm after. Like, I see quite a big gap in the market for performance recording hill sheep over here. There's very little hill sheep are recorded. It just seems to suit my system. You know, they're on the low ground for lambing, and I shift the lambs out daily out of the lambing paddock. They go into a nursery paddock for a day and then on further, so it gives me a chance to get a hold of the lamb, weigh it, tag it, take its mother's number, record the maternal ability, and just take it from there.
Yeah, cool. There's obviously a performance recording system in Scotland that's all going through, is it? Or
yeah, so at the minute I've got all of my data in a spreadsheet. So I'm looking into, the trouble is that the British recording system doesn't actually have a category for body condition score.
Oh, yeah.
And body condition score, well, it feels like I'm preaching to the wrong person here, but you know, body condition score is king. Especially in the kind of conditions that we're trying to farm in. Like I say, we've got really high rainfall. You know, we've got sort of a almost what feels like a 9-month winter sometimes. It's important that a sheep can lay down fat when it's there in front of her, coming out of the ground, and then carry it through the winter and metabolize it when she needs to. There's a heavy reliance on concentrate feeds in the UK, and we're never going to be able to get over to systems like New Zealand have, where you know, you can have a fully grass-based system, but I'd certainly like to be able to move more in that direction and kind of away from concentrates and more to homegrown feed, be it either brassicas or our own silage, etc.
Yeah, no, perfect. And no, you're definitely talking to the right person, mate. Nothing makes me smile more than hearing condition score is king. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a big one.
Although I did get told last week, a breeder told me that we get paid for wool, boy. This fat and muscle stuff, we don't get paid for that yet, so you just focus on the wool. I'm like, well, I reckon you get paid for condition score pretty well. But anyway.
Yeah, no, that's it. Like, I mean, long term, it's so important that, you know, that's kind of one of the benefits of the contracting side, is it opens your eyes to a lot of different systems, and you can see where systems are really performing well and you can see their shortfalls. And yeah, there's a lot of places that I go to where, you know, the farmer might complain about this being wrong or that being wrong. And when I can compare it to other farms that I'm going to, you can generally make correlations between, you know, where things are maybe not happening as well as people would think. You know, for instance, people, you know, they're 20% behind on their scanning percentage compared to old mate across the road, but old mate across the road's weaning his lambs a month earlier, so the ewes are getting a month longer to recover, and you know that's an extra 5 kilos on their back before they're going to the ram. So it's subtle changes like that that seem to make a difference, and I try and pass the good word to as many customers as I can. But it's a lot of the trouble in the UK is that, you know, people are quite happy with the way things are going and slow to change. But I was always taught that the 7 most expensive words in farming are, that's the way we've always done it.
Yeah, that's a cracker. Yeah, I guess we're a little bit lucky. We've only been colonised for a couple of hundred years. You've been going a bit longer to get traditions well and truly embedded. But,
yeah, that's right. Still doing it the way the Romans did.
Yeah, but
no. If it wasn't for Bale Twine, we'd still be on the horse and cart. So.
Awesome. I was actually talking to Vic Ballantyne, who's north of Scotland there somewhere.
Vic's actually not too far away from me. I cover kind of a lot of Vic's area.
Yeah, cool. So she's very much, sounds like she's doing enough field on that. On the whole body condition stuff, so I'm sure you too.
I was delighted to hear that Vic got accepted for the Nuffield, and I was kicking myself at the same time because she's picked the exact topic that I was planning doing in a couple of years. So I'm gonna have to put my thinking cap on and pick another topic.
I wouldn't get too stressed, mate. The number of Nuffields I've sort of seen that seem to do pretty similar topics.
There's a lot of Nuffields on them. I'm sure Vic will do an awesome job. I'm looking forward to seeing where she goes.
Yeah, looking forward to her. She's heading this way early next year, hopefully, so that'll be good.
Yeah.
Oh, good, mate. Something we've just added to the podcast, as in just today, one question we're going to ask every guest, and that's the favourite day on the job. That if you've got a story you can share with us of one of your best days on the job.
Ooh, I don't know. Favourite days on the job has been a lot of good ones. Had my fair share of bad ones. Today being one of them. No, I don't know. I really loved New Zealand and Australia. You know, I had some. Met some of my best mates out there and you know, learned more probably over there than I could have anywhere else. And I don't know, getting the 200 on the Merino ewes, that was a pretty good day. Here alongside my best mate and getting the number I never thought I was gonna get. Over here it was came home from New Zealand my first year, and there was the Next Generation Shepherd of the Year competition, came home and kind of entered that, and didn't really tell anyone I entered it because I was pretty shy about it, and I'm quite competitive, so I don't like being beaten. went down and did that, and I was lucky enough to win it, and I came home and just sat down at the table. Dad came in and having a yarn away, and he goes, "Oh, so how did you get on today then?" And I said, "Yeah, not bad. I won it." And he was pretty happy. So that was a pretty proud moment. So yeah.
Ah, cool. Good story.
Yeah.
Awesome. Just picking up on something you said about, I guess you learned a lot when you're traveling. Do you reckon that's, how much of that is your sort of mindset changes when you move out of your kind of own environment and go and ask questions of others? Is it all about the environment, or is it partly your mindset to ready to accept
information? Yeah, I think both are pretty important. You'd only have to ask my family how often I question things, or ask Rachel. there's a question behind everything. And I remember thinking to myself when I was about 5 or 6, being like, wow, I ask a lot of questions. it's probably when Dad told me to shut up or something like that. But no, it's I certainly think, I was very much a home bird before I left. There was kind of two big influences in me going away to New Zealand, and Dan was one of them. Kept telling me every time he was over scanning news that I had to go to New Zealand. And then my old shearing instructor, George McLeod, he's a real gentleman, sadly passed away there a couple of years ago. He really pushed me to go out. As soon as you get there, it's a big eye-opener. Even the most closed-minded of people, you can't question results. If you see the results in front of you happening, you can't say that it's all just a fairy tale. I think that's the way that a lot of farmers over here, maybe more traditional type people look at it over there. They kind of think that a lot of what the likes of myself come home from New Zealand, and there's plenty of other young lads that have done the whole New Zealand and Australia thing, and they just think their head's full of fairy tales after it. But, it's once you've seen it, you're kind of converted. We were sending lambs away off their mothers at, I think it was 77 days when I was in the North Island, and that was a big thing. Like we're only just about to start sending off our killing lambs. Like we actually do a slow fattening job over here. Just there's a really strong market at the end of the season, and it kind of suits the cheviots because they're slower growing. But yeah, we'll be sending lambs off at 9 months old for killing. It's probably more like the Australian systems. Whereas like when I was in New Zealand, seeing these lambs hitting 45, 50 kilos and they're only, not even 80 days yet. That was a big eye opener on genetics, it's.
Yeah. Yeah, no, cool. I think, my perspective, every time you've moved, gone to different environments, like obviously sort of Victoria, then WA, then New Zealand and various bits around in between. But yeah, I think you always just opens your eyes to a next level when you move and get out of whatever, all your norms get broken or changed or challenged, and that's a good thing. And that's, I think, the best thing you can do for your children or for people under you is get them out of the current environment and do something different for a while. Obviously, you want them back,
I always say that to young farmers and whatnot, and any farmer's sons, etc. When I'm going around shearing, the best thing you can do over here is pick up a handpiece. Once you can get on a handpiece, get over there and start going around farms. It doesn't necessarily have to be shearing, but you can go over and shepherd over there. But yeah, I certainly grew up a lot when I was over there. I went over the first time I was 18, and managed to get the old boy to drop me off at the local train station. Got on the wrong train, nearly went to the wrong side of the country to get over to New Zealand, so it wasn't a great start. And then I reached Dubai and I lost my passport and all my tickets. So I was stuck in Dubai for 11 hours. and then I made it to New Zealand and fell in with really good people, and they I really can't thank them all enough for everything they did for me. Dirk Walden, all of his mates, and then Warren White, shearing contractor down in Waimate. Really just couldn't have asked for better people to work for.
Yeah, fantastic, Ryan. It's been awesome to have a chat, and we'll keep chatting, no doubt, as we do on various forms of social media. But I really look forward to either getting over there or you getting here and meeting in person one day. But thanks very much for coming along, and it's been awesome to hear your story.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, mate, and thanks very much. Really appreciate being asked on, and keep up with the podcast, because it makes those long drives on a snowy Tuesday morning a lot easier.
Yeah. Cheers, mate. We'll chat soon.
Cheers, mate. Take care. Cheers, mate.
Thanks for listening to the Veg Shepherd podcast. If you enjoy listening in each week, please take a moment to subscribe or even give us a review. That'd be fantastic. And if you do get a moment to share it with your networks, we'd also love that so that we can share these great stories with more people. Thanks again to our friends at Allflex for sponsoring this episode. Allflex are wonderful supporters of the Australian and New Zealand livestock industries. Combined now with MSD Animal Health, they offer one of New Zealand and Australia's largest livestock product portfolios focused on animal health and management, all backed up by that exceptional service. We really do enjoy our long-term association with Allflex and thank them very much for again supporting us with bringing this podcast to you.